In October 2020, two brothers began recording a podcast about the horror movies they love. All things seemed successful till they vanished in March of 2021. Now they have returned, the same, yet somehow different. You're listening to Horror Brothers.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Horror Bros. I'm your host, Jason Johnson, along with
JT Johnson. And what am I drinking at 9 o'clock on October 1st, 9 o'clock p.m.?
Sounds like
coffee.
That's what I thought. Sounds like coffee.
Because I'm waiting for some friends to come back from Dallas, probably about 2 o'clock tonight.
So. Oh, good God.
But it's also October 1st, which, you know what that means for a lot of people out there. It's time to watch horror movies. But for us, it's another fucking Sunday. So let's get down to it.
Yes. So what's Sorry. New and you're all good there, Zippy Zipperton. How are you doing there? Shit, man. Any big news this week in the world of horror?
I actually got a couple of reviews for you. One for a new movie and one for a movie that was old, but I know I'll never cover as like a selection. So yeah. I want to talk about it anyway. The first movie, the new movie, I did watch The Nun 2, which is, of course, part of the Conjuring universe for anyone out there who's unaware of that. I think it's an improvement over the original. Yeah. I like the original, but it's probably my least favorite of the Conjuring universe. So this one didn't have a high bar to clear from the first movie. But they continue the story in a really good way. There's like a mystery element to it. Because essentially, I don't want to give too much away. It's a new movie. Sister Irene comes back, played by, I think you pronounce it Tessa Farmiga, mm-hmm. who is Vera Farmiga's sister from the Conjuring movies.
Okay.
She plays Sister Irene, and she learns that Valak, the nun, is still out there and is killing certain priests and other church officials. But there seems to be a path. She seems to be heading somewhere. So there's a mystery as to where she's heading and why she's heading there.
Right.
Thought there was a pretty cool twist with the Valak character, which obviously I'm not going to give away here. And the movie flowed. I mean, it's not filled with a bunch of jump scares, but it's got that tension, that tone that you come to expect from a Conjuring movie.
Right.
And I really enjoyed it, so I definitely recommend it.
Cool. Awesome.
The old movie, and I will explain how I came about rewatching this, was Dracula 2000.
Oh, Lord.
From 2000.
Yeah.
And the way it came about this is I have a friend. She's introducing herself to the Scream movies. And when she got to Scream 3, she said, "This movie is really giving me Dracula 2000 vibes." And I said, "Well, the last time I watched that movie was when it came out on video and I rented it 23 years ago."
Yeah.
And so I said, I can't really tell you anything about it because I can't really remember it. But that does not surprise me because Wes Craven produced Dracula 2000 and directed Scream 3. Both came out in 2000. Both have the same composer. And that was what I remembered about the movie. And then I found it on Max after I talked to her and I was like, you know what? I'm going to rewatch this movie. And I forgot that, yes, it is just this weird Scream clone featuring, Dracula. And I'm very split on whether I want to recommend it or not, because on one hand, Scream clone, that's neither the best nor the worst of the Scream clones that came out at the time. And when I say Scream clone, I mean a young, hip cast, a mystery to be solved, and new metal, which is another reason I might not be able to recommend the movie. But it's got an interesting twist with Dracula, which I'm about to spoil because, fuck you, it's a 23-year-old movie. He's Judas. Like, that's the origin.
Ah.
That's why he's averted to silver.
I've never seen this movie, by the way.
Oh, it's why he's averted to silver,
yeah.
And it's why he hates Christianity. Yeah. He feels, well, God betrayed me. Dracula is played by a young Gerard Butler.
No shit.
And it's fucking weird. Yeah. He comes off as a little bit more cringe, so he's actually a bit of a detriment to the plot. Also doesn't help that the final girl, which is Mary Heller, she's related to Van Helsing, who is alive in this timeline, played by Christopher Plummer, which is the best character in the movie. He stayed alive because he diffused Dracula's blood through leeches, and he takes the syringe to leeches and injects himself, and that's how he keeps himself alive, but not turning into a vampire. The other protagonist is Johnny Lee Miller, and he's great. Like, I like him in Hackers, which is one of my favorite cult films, and he's also in Trainspotting. That should be a more noted film of his because he's fantastic in that. And he played Sherlock Holmes in 7 seasons of Elementary. By the way, this is not the coffee. I'm just trying to speed through this so we can get to the movies.
Right.
Anyway. So there were certain elements I was like, man, if you're interested in wanting to watch the kind of movies that came out in the wake of Scream, or if you want to watch a different take on Dracula, maybe give this one a watch out of curiosity. But the cringeworthy kind of performance from Butler and not having a real good, memorable protagonist. Like, I kind of realized why I forgot about it the moment I watched it. Also makes me want to kind of say not recommend it. And in my written review, which is on the site, horrorbros.com or .blogspot.com, I did give it a skip it, but I was on the verge of giving it a see it. But anyway, that's the movies I've seen since the movies we're going to cover tonight. And now we can move on to the news real quick. The Toxic Avenger released a red band trailer. Doesn't show much.
Yeah.
But it looks like an old school B movie from Troma Entertainment in collaboration with Legendary Pictures. And what I mean by old school is, I mean, it looks like they went for the, we shot this over the weekend and we're giving it to you on Monday tone and feel of like a direct to video release. If that's done right, then I'm there for it. I mean, you've got Peter Dinklage, Elijah Wood, Kevin Bacon, and Giancarlo Esposito in this movie. So they must have thought something could be done with this property.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. Smile 2, the release date has been set. The first film was released last year, earning a surprising $217 million. It will be released next year on October 18th. That's just a quick release date update. Excuse me. And finally, the big news, Bloody Disgusting, confirmed that Miramax has started a bidding war by actively shopping the rights around for the Halloween franchise. Now, for those out there who may not know, with Halloween Ends, that also ended the deal that Miramax and the rights holder, Malik Akkad, had with Universal and Blumhouse Productions. So that means now it's up for grabs. And if I were to think about it, they say a bidding war has started. Like, there's people out there that are wanting it. Warner Brothers, I don't think, would be going for it. They have a hit franchise with the Conjuring universe, which is already the highest grossing horror franchise in film history. My thoughts did turn to Paramount. They may want to put another little horror feather in their cap since they acquired Scream, and Scream has been working out very good for them.
Yeah.
But another interesting aspect of the rights is that it includes both film and television rights. Therefore, a streamer could be trying to get the rights. A lot of streamers are struggling right now. Prices are going up on subscriptions and production costs. You know, Disney Plus and Max and all them, they're not generating profits yet. The only one I could see doing this would be Netflix.
Yeah.
And this is a grain of salt rumor, Jason, but there's apparently a rumor, and I'm talking strict rumor because I've not heard any major publication talk about this, that Malik Akkad, the current rights holder, wants to do a limited series set in the universe of Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Oh, fuck yes. Please don't let this be just a rumor.
Get Tom Atkins to return. He's like an old grizzled.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Fuck yeah.
Like, still yelling, stop it at the wall. Like,
yes.
Like, please stop it. I would just love to see that. But as far as the films are concerned, I was thinking about it, man. It's time. The anthology idea. That audience is one.
Carpenter's original idea that the Babysitter Murders would be the first one, and then there would be more, basically, like sitting around telling ghost stories, you know? Oh, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, I'm done with the Babysitter Murders. Now let's tell the next horror story, you know? But yeah. Yeah, I would love to see that. I would absolutely love to see that.
But beyond that, there was more horror news, I'm sure. But, you know, I only handpicked like two or three things. Those are the big things I picked.
I want to mention a movie real quick that, though not horror, I was just amazed by the trailer, and I cannot wait to actually see this film. It's kind of a comedy thriller, though, from the looks of things. They came out with a trailer for Dream Scenario, Nicolas Cage's new movie. It's coming out, and it looks absolutely amazing.
I have not seen that trailer yet, but I do know that like I've had a few people comment about it, and so I mean, it's Nick Cage, man. I'll look forward to anything.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it looks like this one. It's like, oh, we're gonna get Nick Cage. We're going to put him on his meds, and we're going to have him actually act the way we know Nick Cage can act when he's on the top of his game. And it just looks really good. I just want to tell the people out there, if you haven't seen the trailer, go look at the trailer for Dream Scenario. It looks like it is going to be just a stellar film. So that's my thing for the week. So which one of us wants to go first here, JT?
I think you should go first because...
okay.
Yeah, I think we got a little... we got a good one here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is my all-time favorite on the horror, sci-fi horror type listing here, just above Killer Clowns. It is 1984's Night of the Comet. Rated PG-13, an hour and 35 minutes long. It is directed and written by Tom Eberhardt, and it stars one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen, Catherine Mary Stewart. She's gorgeous. She always has been. But, you know, hey, that's just me.
And in the case of this movie, likes Tempest.
Yes, loves the game Tempest, and, you know. She plays Regina Belmont. Kelly Maroney plays Samantha Belmont, her sister. Robert Beltran plays Hector Gomez, and he is fucking awesome in this movie. Sharon Farrell plays Doris Beaumont. Total bitch, but anyway. Jeffrey Lewis, world famous character actor, plays Dr. Carter. And then there is a number of other people in this movie. Mary Warrenov, Peter Fox, John Acorn. These are all parts of the different things going on during this weird-ass movie.
One other name to mention, Ivan E. Roth. Who plays Willie?
Yeah, I saw him down there at the bottom. Where would I know him besides?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the head of the gang in the mall.
That's it. Okay. Yeah. Speaking of, you want to talk about a fucking movie that has it all. We have the badass older sister, the cute cheerleader younger sister. We have they were both raised by a Green Beret. We have a mall scene which has a weird gang in it. We have the hero. We also have a sinister scientific secret community searching for solutions. That's right, alliteration. We literally have everything. So where do I begin? Well, let's start at the beginning. The beginning of the movie opens with a narration. There's a comet headed towards Earth, which produces a great light show that everybody's going to want to see. and it hasn't been seen in 65 million years, which is oddly the time when the dinosaurs died out. Some people on Earth don't think this is just a coincidence.
Wink.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, everyone's going outside. There's these huge parties happening in the street all over the world because it's this one time every 65 million years this comet comes. We're going to pass right through the tail, and it's going to be this incredible, basically a light show going on. Regina's working in a movie theater. She, we find out very quickly, she is banging the projector guy. And they do so, and they fall asleep in the projection room. The sister was in a fucked up scene. Was punched out by the stepmom.
By her fucking stepmom.
Yeah, and just wait till Daddy hears about this one. Yeah, okay. She runs away from home and hides in a steel garden shed, a metal garden shed, so on and so forth. So, they wake up the next morning in the projection booth. Old boy runs out, to the door because he's going to go out, collect some money from a guy, and immediately attacked by a zombie with a pipe wrench. That's right, folks, zombies. And what we start to quickly find out is that when we pass through the tail of this comet, basically it dried out all human bodies and everybody's turned into this orange powder. Now, the reason there's a zombie is some people were only, maybe inside their house and only a little exposed to it. Some people were inside these steel rooms and, which is what we figure out, which our main hero later ended up being in the back of his semi-truck that he drove. That's the reason why he was spared. And they turn into... the people that were in these steel rooms are fine. They're good. They weren't exposed. Anybody that was out in the streets watching for it, they were turned instantly into this red-orange powder.
And calcium then, deposits.
Yes, calcium deposits, which would be white, by the way.
Yeah. Well, the orange sky, maybe that adds.
Yeah, maybe, and then anybody who was half exposed, they can range anywhere from perfectly fine, but knowing they're going to change and eventually become completely desiccated, or they're just all-out zombies on their way to being desiccated. And when they turn to zombies, they're very violent. Which Reg quickly finds out when she gets outside of the projection room and is attacked by a zombie that looks at her and says, "Come here, come here." Yes, that's right. They talk. I'm telling you, this movie has it all. She finds her sister, convinces her sister, look, everyone's fucking dead for Christ's sake, you know? And they go to the local radio station, which has some radio station tech that I don't believe existed in the time, but it's how they explain that this radio station is still going. They go in, and there's a series of about four or five reel-to-reel tape recorders that have commercials and DJ breaks and music, and they are on timers that automatically pop back and forth and between them, so it puts together a radio program, but it's a completely unmanned radio station. That's when our hero turns up into this, our male protagonist. That's Hector. He, like I said, he slept in the back of his truck, and then they all decide he goes off to find his mom. In the meantime, the girls go to whatever military base their dad was on and steal, for some reason, a bunch of MAC-10s, which the United States military has never used MAC-10s. I don't know. It was a cool little gun in the 80s. It's an automatic pistol for those of y'all that don't know. And they go and decide to shoot up cars to make sure they still know how to use these things. Yay. Again, has everything. And then that's when they go to the mall.
MAC-10s, i.e. yeah. what we could afford for this film's budget.
Ah, there you go. Yeah, I do believe. In fact, at one point, she even says if they weren't so cheap, Daddy would have gotten us Uzis or some shit like that. And I think that's a line in the movie. But so yeah, they go to the mall. In the meantime, this whole time, this science group had locked themselves away underground. But they've realized that they are exposed and they're going to change eventually. And they're trying to develop a serum. So they're going out.
And they're so pissed that these two girls just randomly survived.
Yes.
When they just made the dumbest decision of not turning off the ventilation system.
Right, sorry. Right.
Go ahead.
And Mary Warrenoff, who plays Audrey White, which is one of the scientists, she's saying, why are we bringing these people into here? We're exposed. We're going to change. There's nothing changing that. Why are we bringing them here? It almost seems like she's like, fuck it, I just want to let the world die. Because at this time, we think the scientists are doing the right thing. They're trying to make sure everyone lives.
Audrey's kind of set up as the villain at first.
Right, right. Yeah. And she's kind of against them, you know. And so anyway, they go to the mall, was all teenage girls do. They decide, fuck it, everyone's dead, let's just go to the mall and try on clothes and shit. And this is where they run into the weirdest, most 80s fucking gang I've ever seen. It's like if Oingo Boingo decided to fucking, or Devo decided to be a gang in this fucking movie. Go ahead.
And Roth is Willie. I just got to go ahead and say this. He is my standout breakout character in this movie. He's in it for however long he's in it. Favorite fucking line, and it's purely based on delivery. Yeah. I'm not crazy. I just don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Great line. He is very standout in this film for the way he played the character. It's just very over the top, and I love it. I love every second of it. So there we are. They're at the mall. The gang has gotten a hold of them. They've been having shootouts and stuff with them. And then the scientists show up. They're trying to pick these girls up because just before they went to the mall, they had gotten on the radio station and started, you know, hey, if anybody's out there, we're at this radio station. So they get to the radio station. They're not there. They're like, well, where would any teenage girl go at this age? And they, oh, of course, the mall. So they show up. They kill the gang and get the two girls. From here on out, I could go scene by scene with this, which I've been doing so far. But now it's set up. One of the girls goes to the institute thing. The other girl is supposedly dead. Audrey, the younger sister, Audrey gives her a shot, and basically it's put to us that she's put her down, basically, because she's got no hope of living.
Yeah, she's supposedly got a rash, right, and so she's exposed, but the sister's fine. Right. The older sister is fine.
Right,
so, yeah.
Right. Turns out the rash was just because she gets hives when she gets anxious and nervous. And so
and real quick, we meet Robert Beltran's Hector. We meet him at the radio station. But if you're wondering why we haven't talked about him much, he fucks off for a minute to go check on his own family.
Right. He goes down to San Diego to see if they're still alive.
Where he has a fucking great fucking encounter.
Right.
With a zombified kid.
Yes. Which, by the way, Robert Beltran, if you want to know where you've seen him before, if you're a fan of Star Trek Voyager, he was Chakotay. Commander
and one
Chakotay.
Of the better highlights of that show.
Yes. He was also in the movie Nixon and the movie Bugsy. But he's been in a ton of stuff, though. I mean, if you go back and look, he's in all kinds of movies. So anyway, long story short, to finish this up, we find out that they are going to get survivors because they are removing all their life functions, basically putting them on life support, so they'll just produce blood. And that way they can take this blood and make a serum for this thing. But they're killing the survivors in order to do it, just to keep themselves alive, because they know they've been exposed. So thus they are the bad guys, the sinister science people.
Yeah, which is like personified by Jeffrey Lewis's Dr. Carter.
Yes, and he does great. There's a bunch of other little scientists, but they're just there to be killed by the protagonists of the film. They're not really, they don't become anything. He does. He's desperate. He knows he's changing. He can sense it. He can feel it. In the meantime, Mary, we find out, or not Mary, that's the actress, Audrey gave Samantha, the younger sister, just something to put her to sleep so that they would think she was dead. Hector comes back. He finds her in the mall, and then he goes to the radio station first. He finds Audrey. Audrey lets him know what's going on. And then she does inject herself, and she kills herself. She knows she's been exposed, and she knows it's going soon. She's going to turn into a zombie. So she goes ahead on it, offs herself.
Yeah, in this movie, if you're wearing cool sunglasses, it means you're exposed and you're going to die.
Yeah, you're fucked. You're fucked. And as we find out in a couple of scenes, when people actually take off their sunglasses, their eye sockets are empty. It's fucking weird. Again,
pretty fucking metal.
For this has about every 80s thing you could fucking want in it. where am I here? So Hector goes, he finds Samantha. They go to the scientist thing there, and somewhere along the way, they found a fuck ton of dynamite, and they end up taking care of these scientist business in a very explosive way. They also pick up two children that the scientists had brought in and were about to basically turn them into just blood production facilities. And then everybody gets in the car and rides off into the sunset. Literally for two of our characters. I fucking love this movie. I love it so much. It has everything 80s in it. I found it back when, it would run on HBO every now and then, or it would run on one of the cable channels late at night. And, just everything about it is awesome. Everything about it screams 80s. And if they ever said they were going to remake it, I would have to piss on someone's grave for that. This movie is exactly where it needs to be, stuck in the 80s. how about you, JT? I know for years I would say, oh, yeah, have you ever seen Night of the Comet? And you would say, nope, still never seen it. And I'd be like, what the fuck's wrong with you, boy?
Yeah, this was one of those rare 80s gems that, like, went under the radar for me until about 2 years ago. And it was based on your recommendation that I just went ahead and got it from Shout Factory.
Yeah.
Blu-ray from Shout Factory, and I watched it. And you're right, it's everything that I love about 80s films.
Yeah.
So I was predetermined to love this movie. And for audiences out there, this also came out at a time when there was another subgenre in the 80s called the Valley Girl film.
Yes.
Literally personified by a film called Valley Girl. Yep. And there were other films like Earth Girls Are Easy.
Yeah.
Was another big one. And part of the reason Atlantic wanted this movie was for that reason. It combined the Valley Girl subgenre with the horror sci-fi subgenre.
And another genre, action. You have action, like, movie. There's so many 80s genres that were so popular back then that are just crammed into this film.
Yeah. And the it's a wonderful mishmash. Like, you can kind of get into a problem of some films you don't really want a mashup of different genres. It's got to be a very delicate balance, and somehow this movie finds that delicate balance with all of the genres that it plays around with. The Valley Girl persona is definitely personified by Maroney's character, who I absolutely love. She's a smart ass, which I just love.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sam's the one to be like, get on the radio and go, hey, do you have any exams next week? Guess what? Not now.
Yeah.
Drinking age is 10 years old, but you still need your ID. I mean, let's be real here. got those wonderful moments. I like that. I watched an interview with Beltran about the movie, where he said, like, he only accepted the role because he liked that Hector was like a positive Latino character, which was not easy to come by in the '80s. Unfortunately,
no, not at all.
You were going to be a gang member or something.
If you were a black male or you were a Hispanic male, you were a gang member. That was it. Yeah. That was the roles you were given.
And so this movie is very progressive for its time. Have two female action stars, and they're capable. They don't need Hector.
No. They're a
Hector
team.
Hector just happens to be there. They become a team.
Yeah.
I will tell you my one nitpick, but Jason, you have to give me a nerd alert.
Okay. Nerd alert.
Because of all the things in this movie, this is the one thing that bugs me.
Okay.
She notices that in the game Tempest, there's a guy named DMK in the high scores at number 6.
Yes.
The next day, she plays and replaces DMK at number 6.
Fuck, I had it in my notes to talk about here in a minute. Yep.
It should have pushed his name down, but they're acting like it replaced him
outright.
She
should have had to win enough games to completely push his name down the list. Yes, I know. I noticed it too. My autistic ass was like, no, that's not how that works. and yes, that's just really my only bitch. Yep. That's
my stupid fucking note. But
that is my, that's one of my, moments.
Push my glasses up from my nose.
Listen, and there could be a million more in this movie because this is, this is one of those movies that you can rip apart at the seams. Scientifically, action-wise, with the gunplay, but why? It's so much fun. Just enjoy the ride.
On the other hand, the guy that shows up at the end that nearly runs over Sam, and she gets in the car with him because he's handsome, and it's like, hey, I've got 23 more cars. You want to go ride around? Yeah. And the license plate says DMK.
He's DMK. The guy. Yeah, and DMK made it.
I would have loved just one reaction shot of Reggie going, hey.
Yeah. They don't even acknowledge. She, the one who was worried about who the fuck DMK is during the start of the movie, has no acknowledgement at all that his license plate is DMK.
But no, when I watched this movie, though, I absolutely loved it. I mean, it was a blast from beginning to end. I will say, compared to other films of this ilk, of this genre, this B-movie sci-fi genre, it's kind of a slow build to an exciting third act, as they traverse the city and kind of go from point to point. So that's just to say, it's not a bad slow build. That's just to say, if you're wondering, like, where's the action y'all are talking about, you do kind of have to wait for it a little bit. I would say once they enter the mall, that's when the action really kicks off.
Right.
The action part of this movie truly kicks off. With a pretty astounding shootout sequence.
That's
the thing. Out of nowhere, there's like five people trying to shoot these two ladies, and then they've got fucking MAC-10s.
Yeah, and none of them can aim for shit.
No.
Nobody hits anything. It's crazy. But that is one thing that I thought was funny as hell. It's so asinine, it's funny to me. It's not a gripe about the movie. She is right behind them. They are paying all their attention to the sister. She has a MAC-10 submachine gun sitting there in her hands. And instead of just blasting these motherfuckers and kills them, she sneaks around them so she can pop up and say, like, hey, and then they have time to jump out of the way as she starts shooting. Yeah.
And
but
I love that's
an 80s thing, though. I love it.
Oh, another 80s thing. I love that it ends with they've got Sam. They're holding her hostage. Mm-hmm. She grabs one of them. She's holding the older sister, Reggie, holding them hostage. Yeah. He's like, let my sister go or I'll kill him. And Willie is like, yeah, I can't have you with one of my men. You may kill me, but I'll get him first. He's like, you don't understand. I can't have you with one of my men. And he shoots the man.
Yeah, shoots his own guy. Yeah.
That's just a classic 80s villain move.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
oh, speaking of classic 80s, here's a note that I had. They do an 80s, just a classic 80s move here. The dream within a dream. That's,
yep.
That's where a character, for those of y'all listening, that's where a character in the film is having a nightmare, and they wake up from that nightmare, and they scream, ah, you know, and they're just like, oh, no. And then they go on, like in this movie, and this is typically what they do, they go to the bathroom to splash water on their face and get themselves good and woke up, and then something else will happen, and they'll scream, you know, a zombie will hop out, or their face will start to melt in the fucking mirror or something. And then they wake up again. So they get you. They got you. You thought the dream was over, but it's not.
But we got you again.
And so, yeah, that was a classic 80s move. That happened in so many different movies. But, yeah. Like I said, it's 80s movie through and through. It is everything about the 80s. So, yeah. Let's see here. I don't think I have too much more. I didn't want to get too deep into this because I could literally sit here and talk for the next 4 hours on this movie. You know. But, yeah. Yeah. How about... are we... I think I'm done. Yeah, I'm looking at my notes here, and I don't really have anything else. So, just final words. Yeah, love this movie. I think everybody should see it. I think anybody who wants to know anything about the 80s should watch it. From fashion to everything, it'll tell you everything you ever needed to know about the 80s.
Same. Yeah. Same thoughts there.
Oh, the,
it works. It slaps, before as the kids would say.
Yeah, before we move on to your movie, I do one final note. The original title of this film was Teenage Mutant Comet Zombies. Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
I kind of like it.
I kind of want to see that on a poster.
Yeah, I kind of do. Kind of do. But, okay, so... that's my pick for this week. Let's move on to your movie. What did we watch this week?
Jordan? All right. We got to go back 20 years in our horror movie time machine.
Yep.
On their way to investigate where a notorious serial killer was hanged, four friends soon pick up a hitchhiker and find themselves meeting a family that seems to be straight out of hell. I am, of course, talking about House of 1,000 Corpses. The film debut from writer and director, in this case, Rob Zombie. Starring Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding, Bill Moseley as Otis, Sherry Moon Zombie as Baby, Karen Black as Mother Firefly, Rainn Wilson as Bill, Chris Hardwick as Jerry, Jennifer Johnston as Mary, Aaron Daniels as Denise, Walter Goggins as Deputy Steve, Tom Towles as Deputy Wydell, Matthew McGrory as Tiny, Robert Alan Mukes as Rufus, and Harrison Young as Don.
Yep.
So
Sherry Moon Zombie is in this. I wonder if he did that for any of his other films.
I think one or two. I think she may have popped up in one of those shitty Halloween films. So, yeah, this movie, it's an obvious nod to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And especially, in my opinion, Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Yeah. Give me 1 second, Jason. I got to do a little edit break here. I got to check something real quick.
Okay. For those of y'all out there who are wondering what's going on, JT is having to check some notes or something right now. So how are y'all doing? I'm doing well. I've been doing Uber Eats a lot. Like, not eating food, but like delivering food. Like, you can make a lot of money doing this. It's unreal. And I was just sitting around listening to podcasts, kind of like you are now. And now I deliver for Uber Eats while I listen to podcasts. And I make tons of cash. He's still gone. Holy shit. Well, I guess I could do more ad reads for products that don't exist. Johnson's pen holders. Johnson's pen holders. When you need to hold a pen with your Johnson. That's right. I don't know what kind of weird art stuff you people are into. I'm into some weird art stuff. Yeah, it's Japanese type stuff. A lot of tentacles. Things like that. Anyway, yeah, been doing Uber Eats and stuff out there in America. And it's a lot of fun. And, oh, there he is. Back from whatever he was doing.
Sorry, JT Johnson. Gang. I'm dog sitting.
Yeah.
And I heard a noise from the living room, and I raced in there, and she was standing there like with tail wagging, looking at the back door, and I was like, "Wait, what the hell?"
Yeah. Right as we start talking about House of a Thousand Corpses, that's not fucking cool. And it's on October 1st. That's not fucking cool.
But. Everything seemed to be fine, but yeah, it was a little bit of a spook there because I heard a chain noise, but I think it may have been she looks like she's got like a chain-like collar on, so that may have been hitting the floor or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, okay, whatever.
Don't worry about it. I was just sitting here talking to all of America.
Okay.
And hopefully they'll get the hidden message that I placed within my two little things I was talking about.
Okay.
Or maybe not. We'll just see. Or maybe I'm just trying to drive some people crazy by making them believe that there's a hidden message in something where there's no hidden message at all. This is the type of shit I do. Anyway, let's go back to your film, sir. House of a Thousand Corpses.
House of a Thousand Corpses was a film that is obviously a nod to Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Rob Zombie essentially came up with the idea. I didn't know this, but in 1999, he designed a maze for Universal Horror Nights that actually helped revitalize Universal Horror Nights.
Oh, that's awesome.
And during that time, he said he came up with this pitch for this movie, and he made the pitch to Universal, and the idea was he sent them a 12-page treatment. And before he knew it, he was shooting 2 months later. The movie was shot in 2000. And what also was going to happen was there was going to be a maze. He designed another maze incorporating elements from the movie that was going to be called House of a Thousand Corpses, just like the movie.
Yeah.
But Universal shelved the movie, fearing that they could not get around an NC-17 rating. They still did the maze, but they changed it to American Nightmare. And despite the name change, it still had elements from the film. Right. And they still played the fucking trailer for the movie, which was another thing they were going to do during the maze.
Right.
Zombie, he eventually bought the rights from Universal Pictures so he could shop the film around.
Yeah.
And eventually Lionsgate was the studio that would release the movie. The movie definitely went on to have a cult status. I remember it kind of came and went. We were all like, "Ooh, Rob Zombie made a movie," and then it went away.
Right.
But it found a bigger audience. I saw it in theaters when it came out. Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. But I was also kind of in high school, so I was the right age to watch this kind of horror film. The movie really found its larger audience though after the release of the sequel, The Devil's Rejects, in 2005, which I will say it's the superior film.
Oh, like, fuck yeah. I love The Devil's Rejects.
And I'm not going to talk about The Devil's Rejects too much because that will be a topic on this fucking
show. Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, we're going to hit that one.
There have been rumors of a director's or extended cut because they did have to cut a lot down to get it to an R rating and all that kind of shit with the NBA. But Zombie doesn't think it'll ever happen because he thinks the cut footage is gone. Like, he doesn't think Universal even
they
has
just
it anymore.
Threw it out. Yeah.
And it's completely done for. I will admit, when I rewatched this movie, did not hit me as much as I thought it would when I saw it when I was younger.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Which, you know, sometimes happens, but you can see that there's an amateur filmmaker here at work. And not only that, you can see it's like a musician making his version of Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It felt like a prolonged music video with music video segments put throughout. And I'm not the only one to make this observation. Rob Zombie himself has even in more recent years acknowledged these weaknesses.
This is his learning thing, you know.
This is his learning film.
He threw in a 12-page treatment, and a couple of weeks later, he's filming a movie. I'm sure he didn't think things would go that fast, you know. I'm sure he thought, I'll have time. I'll present it. They'll go through all the bullshit. They. I don't think he realized Universal would chomp down on it that quick, you know.
Yeah. But there are some reasons to still watch this movie. I still recommend it.
Right.
First off, if you want to see fat alcoholic Chris Hardwick,
yes,
he's in this movie. He plays Jerry. He plays that comedic relief character that I usually hate in these fucking movies.
Yep. But I
don't hate him.
You
I
fucking love him in this movie.
I think he's good. You got a young pre-office Rain. Rainn Wilson.
Yep.
As Bill. Jennifer Joston as Mary. She is, I think she's Bill's she's Jerry's girlfriend, I think. Because it's two couples. That's what I'm having trouble remembering. And then Aaron Daniels plays Denise. Denise is our final girl. I'm going to go ahead and say that.
Yeah.
She's our final girl of the piece. Walter Goggins, for those who are Justified fans or Hateful Eight fans or any of the numerous things where he's popped up in these recent years, he's poor Deputy Steve.
Yeah.
In the most prolonged fucking, like, execution style scenes. But the two big hits here. Well, first off, I'll throw some compliments to Sherry Moon Zombie as Baby. She does a good job as Baby.
Yes, she does.
Probably where she plays to her strengths. Some people will probably say, yeah, but she has that annoying laugh. I think she's supposed to have that annoying laugh.
Yeah,
I mean, I think you're supposed to find that grating.
She's supposed to be creepy and annoying and, you know, no one in this family is supposed to, you're not supposed to like anything about this fucking family.
No.
Except for maybe
all.
Captain Spaulding. Yeah, you know.
That's what I was about to say. In this film, because you don't know his connection completely in this movie.
Right.
You find out more about him later. But yeah, the two strengths in this movie is Sid Haig as Captain Spaulding.
Fuck yeah.
And Bill Moseley as Otis. And before anyone says it, yes, I'm sure the direction to Bill Moseley was, hey, remember Chop Top and Texas Chainsaw Part 2? Do that.
Yeah.
I'm sure that was it. But he is so fucking good at playing fucking crazy.
Yes.
And because he can do both. He can play that subtle fucking tone of crazy where he is genuinely fucking creepy, or he can go over the top like, look what I made! Like, shit like that.
Yeah.
Fish boy, that's all I'll say.
Yeah.
With what he does with one of the characters. But Captain Spaulding, played by Sid Haig, you meet him at the top of the movie, and he sets the fucking tone for the movie. He's this character that owns this convenience store / horror museum where he gives a tour, and that's where we learn the story of Dr. Satan, and how Dr. Satan was a serial killer years ago, and they hung him, and that's what sets the kids like, can we go visit his where he was hanged, where he was hanged, and, right. and they and that's what sets the whole thing going. At the end of the day, I have to admit that it is a Texas Chainsaw Massacre clone. It gets crazier and crazier. There are some unique designs at the end, especially when she gets underground, where Denise gets underground, and there's some wackiness. I'll just put it that way. But at the end of the day, I was kind of like, yeah, zombies done better.
Yeah.
And zombies already a guy that splits people anyway. Like, I've noticed the horror fandom seems really split on zombie I think a big part of the reason is I don't think he attempts to say anything with his films except I want to make fucking grindhouse horror movies.
Well, and you know, and
you plus, either like that or you don't.
And plus, he has blunders in other ways. For instance, you and I both agree on this. He fucked up Halloween. He tried to make us sympathize with Michael Myers and why he did what he did. The thing about Michael Myers is he's supposed to be just evil. There is no explanation for why he did what he did. He's just evil. And you don't need a lot of background and all. You want him to be a mystery. However, you and I have also both agreed if he had made a movie not based on Halloween, but just made a movie about how a serial killer is made, how how this kid grows from being just a kind of weird, fucked up kid to an actual serial killer, that would have been an excellent fucking movie. But because he slapped Halloween on it, you know, and that's where this movie suffered because it's his first one, and many critics have said it, you've said it, I've said it, looks like a long ass music video. But yeah, and I think that's why he splits so many people, because I can't find hardly anybody who will tell me that
Devil's Rejects
is bad. Everyone I know loves that fucking movie.
The detractors of Rob Zombie will even say like, "Oh, Devil's Rejects, that's the one where he got it right. Never did again," or some shit like that. For me, it's one of those I've seen better from him. I mean, I'll be honest with you, Jason. As much as I don't like what he did with the story of Halloween,
yeah,
I think Halloween in 2007 is a better film, better made film than this one. Like all of his, shown a progression of sorts.
Absolutely.
Throughout his films.
Like I said, that is a well-made film. You take the name Halloween off of it and take the fucking Shatner mask out of it, and it's just a great fucking movie about a kid who develops into a serial killer over time, you know? Loses his fucking mind and has shit parents and the whole nine yards. I'll tell you, I like this movie. I like this movie a lot. I think it's a lot of fun, mainly because, like I said, early Chris Hardwick, Sid Haig, and whatnot. And what am I trying to say here? I think I like this movie because I look at zombie movies and I say, okay, that's the genre that he is trying to go for and pay homage to, and I like that. And I can see where he did a good job of copying that genre in doing that. But you weren't captivated by it again. Is this just one of those now that's kind of like, it entertains me, but it's not what it was when it first came out?
Yeah, I mean, that very rarely happens to me, like, in both ways. Sometimes sometimes I'll see a movie I didn't like and be like, holy crap, why didn't I like this the first time? But vice versa of that is, like, very rarely I'll see a movie that I, like, really enjoyed when it came out, and then the second time I'm like, ooh, this is not aged well or something. And I think the reason for it being is I watched this at peak my initial peak horror fandom, which was in high school.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just post high school, because it was 2003. And so it probably hit my younger brain a little bit better. And then it doesn't help that I didn't really revisit the film, except maybe once in the 20 years that it's been out. So it didn't stick with me like other films that I watched from years past. And so it's not that I don't recommend it. I still recommend it. It's just, I have to say that, like, you know, go into it knowing it's his first film, go into it knowing it's a tribute to grindhouse films, and maybe not much more than that. It's not trying to say anything.
Yeah. I mean, you can almost tell that, like, these characters that do carry on throughout Devil's Rejects and Three from Hell, that story wasn't there. This wasn't a planned trilogy. This was, we had this movie. Let's take these characters from that movie and say, well, this is what happens next, you know? Mm-hmm. So, it's a one-off type thing. It was just a thing that when you talk about the development of it, it is very fast, very quick. And I'm sure no one thought it was going to be
so fast. Universal didn't realize what he was making until he made it. Nope.
Yep. Oh, shit.
Zombie says this, so you have to take his word for it. But he said that, like, when he pitched it to Universal, he told them, I'm going to make a movie where characters no one sympathizes with. It's going to be a grindhouse, bloody, gory movie. He didn't lie to them and tell them, like, this is going to be a fun family ride. Yeah. Or, hey, don't worry, Universal, this movie has a family in it. Trust me.
Right. Like, you know, yeah.
He was like, no, this is going to be some fucked up shit. And then they shelved it, of course, which happens from time to time. I mean, one of the biggest cult films of the recent years is, I don't know if you've ever watched it, Jason, but Trick or Treat.
I've never seen that film. In fact, I was thinking about, on one of these episodes here this month, doing that movie so I could watch it finally, because I've never seen it.
Yeah, WB, Warner Brothers, they had this anthology movie made, they shelved it, and then they finally released it direct to video.
Yeah.
And it's like this really big cult film that has I'll just say this, a movie monster that everyone is like, you know, there's been a desire to have a sequel made, which I don't think will ever happen, because I think the people who made the movie don't want to do it. But that, it just happens from time to time. These studios will have someone make a horror movie, and then they'll see it and they'll be like, "Oh no!" And they'll shelve it, usually for a few years, or they'll sell it to another distributor.
Right.
And that's what happened with this movie. I don't really have very many more notes. I surprisingly had trouble finding a whole heck of a lot on House of a Thousand Corpses beyond the few facts that I gave. So.
Yep.
I'm kind of wrapped up. Like I said, I recommend it. Just go into it knowing it's not perfect. It is what it is.
Right.
Kind of a movie.
I'm going to go ahead and say, let's go ahead and rate them. Let's start with yours, because I'll give my rating and it'll be explained why when I give it. It's not that I hate this film, but I'm not going to take some
for House of a Thousand Corpses.
Yeah,
for House of a Thousand Corpses. I give House of a Thousand Corpses 3 out of 5 fish boys.
3 out of 5 fish boys. I like that. I like that. Which is right in line with where I'm at, with a 6 out of 10 gas stations where you got a goddamn warning not to keep going, but you just didn't fucking listen. The reason I'm taking the points off is for everything you just talked about. There's a lot of stuff in this movie that, if you're a cinephile out there and you haven't seen this, it's going to annoy the fuck out of you. So, you know, but anyway, how about Night of the Comet? What would you give it?
I give Night of the Comets 5 out of 5 jammed Mac 10s.
There you go. Yeah, I give Night of the Comet 10 out of 10 Tempest Machines. I love this fucking movie. It, like I said, it should be like in history classes, whenever they're teaching about the 80s, they should just have to show this fucking film to and just say, this was the 80s. You got malls, cheerleaders, fucking badass girls who are into high fashion, protagonists and antagonists, and they're zombies and powder, and I mean, fuck, it's got everything. Bad, evil scientists. It's, oh god, yeah, love this fucking movie.
I guess over on the Horror Bros blog, I've only got three things. Mm-hmm. Full written reviews for the two films I discussed at the top of the show, The Nun 2 and Dracula 2000, if you want to read some more thoughts I had on those films.
Yep.
I also wrote a review, and maybe eventually I'll have a review for the newest movie. I wrote a review for the original Saw, which came out in 2004. As everyone knows, this weekend, Saw X or Saw 10 or whatever you want to call it came out. Meant to watch it this weekend, but plans such as people being out of town, dog sitting, stuff like that,
yeah.
kind of interfered. But it'll actually give me time to rewatch the other Saw films.
Yes.
And hopefully by the next time we record, I will have had Saw 10 watched, and maybe I can give my thoughts on that.
Awesome. It's getting hellaciously good reviews out there, so it's better than we thought. Yeah.
Highest reviewed. Yeah. Apparently Tobin Bell, like, fucking rocks it.
Knocks it out of fucking park. Yeah.
And that's kind of what I was looking forward to.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that the producer said in a recent interview, I think it's pretty obvious we hate that we had to kill Jigsaw off early on.
Yeah.
Nature of his character. And it was like, yeah, because he's up there with the greats.
Yeah.
Jason, I'm going to ask you first.
Yeah.
What do you got next week?
I don't have anything to announce this week except for the movie that I'm going to be talking about. I'm going to be watching a movie that I first saw on a deployment. And I remember loving this movie, but over the last couple of weeks when I've been thinking about doing this movie and I've kind of looked around on the internet, this movie like has major conflicts for people for some reason. I don't get it. It's 30 Days of Night.
Okay.
Yeah,
I have seen that movie.
Yep.
I remember. I'm not gonna lie. I remember not liking it.
Yeah, yeah.
but I have not seen it since it came out because I didn't like it.
But
so.
Well, and I'll have to admit, one of the reasons that I want to rewatch it is because yes, I was deployed whenever I watched it, and when you're deployed, you can get kind of starved for entertainment. And then anything's good at that moment. So I really want to go back, rewatch it, and see if I can see if I really did like it or if it was just I needed to see something, you know, over there. How about you? What are you doing this coming week?
I'm going to make you watch it.
Oh, Lord.
I'm going to make you watch it. A Quiet Place Part 2.
Nice. 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 Awesome. Awesome.
So
good. That'll give me a chance to sit down and watch it. I haven't had a chance because I've been so busy here recently, but I've actually slowed down a little bit. So that's good. And I can sit down and watch that. Also, you know, it's don't be surprised if we're not throwing maybe a couple of movies in there that you didn't think we were going to do. It is October. We are watching horror films, some of the ones we've never seen, some of the ones we have seen and just want to see again, and we might want to throw in a blurb or two about those.
And yes, that was actually what I meant to say about why one of the reasons I talked about Dracula 2000 earlier was I might be watching some oddball stuff that maybe I'll never pick. I know I'll never pick it for the show.
Yeah.
So why not go ahead and just be like, hey, I watched this. It was fucking weird or it was great or it sucked or whatever. And then, of course, I'll be writing reviews and stuff this week just randomly. It's going to be a little bit more random this year because I actually have schedules.
Yeah.
Like, I have other crap in my life.
Yeah.
Normally I didn't have.
And so, folks... with that being said, a couple announcements. Number one, an apology for me. I know I droned on and on about Night of the Comet, but it's very hard to explain this movie in just a short blurb. Sorry.
I was glad you did, because I knew that the House of Thousand Corpses was going to be a shorter discussion. Because
right. Yeah.
I didn't have much to say.
There's not that much to say. The second thing is please go to Facebook and check out our page, Horror Bros. Like it. And while you're there, in any time we pop up in your feed that we've made an announcement for a new episode or something, please share that with all your friends. That gets the word out there about us, gets us more listeners. And the more listeners we get, the more we get towards maybe this being something, and we can do something else with it. Also, you can find announcements on Instagram at my page, Jason_Johnson Comedy. That's where I am on Instagram. Anyway, remember, everybody, love each other. Bye.
Later.